What's up, punks? It's Shinobi, and we are bringing you Block Digest episode 234 at block height 644,875 on Saturday, August 22nd. So what is shaking today, Janine?
Well, what is shaking is my desire to ever eat vegetarian ice cream again, because this is not what I expected. This is not what I want.
You committed a mortal sin. I think your Bitcoin card is going to have to get revoked.
I'm also shaking with laughter at the fact that, you know, despite getting so much praise for the stories they wrote using the NSA revelations, the Washington Post has decided to put an opinion piece saying that Edward Snowden should not get a pardon because they are dipshits who have no shame.
Yeah, that's been an interesting thing in terms of Trump hinting at pardoning Snowden, just in terms of both obviously Assange and Ulbricht coming up everywhere I see it pop up, at least. But then just like who exactly is like instantly going no?
Yeah, I mean, why would you bother to pardon living people who are actually suffering under the current so-called justice system when you could pardon a woman who's been dead for 114 years?
Yeah, that was obviously just a campaign season humoring.
In better news, Julian Assange's partner has already raised tens of thousands of dollars for his legal defense fund in England after only a day or so.
That is encouraging.
Well, I should say tens of thousands of pounds, but yes.
Oh man, my brain, it's just, I can't even banter right now. I am just so flabbergasted at the first stupid thing.
Yeah, let's talk about the asteroid. what a perfect way to die. I'm ready.
Yes, the 6.5 feet diameter asteroid. It's going to kill everybody the day before the election. Oh my god.
It's going to break apart into pieces and conveniently hit the whatever machines they use to calculate the vote. That'll be great.
Nah, it's going to break up over DC as celebration fireworks when Trump wins again.
Well, yes, Doomsday would be a celebration for that crowd, you know?
Alrighty though, I feel like I just have to exercise this entire stupid situation out of my brain and just get it done with.
Yeah, speaking of the other asteroid, and by that I mean roids in the ass.
So, yeah, 3 days ago now, Samurai Wallet made a public announcement that they had found two critical vulnerabilities in Wasabi that they had disclosed to ZK Snacks, the company, and that communications had broken down between the two teams. So they were following through with their ultimatum to just publicly disclose things within 2 days of informing ZK Snacks of the critical vulnerability. And yeah, it's been a stupid shit show for the past 3 days.
So communication broke down, has it? That mm-hmm. That's very new. I was not aware that communication had broken down, you know, just looking at Twitter over the past year or so, you would never get the idea that these two can't work together.
Yep. But pretty much no point beating around the bush. This is not a critical vulnerability. I think there's actually an argument to be made that this is not even an issue. Period. Although I wouldn't personally make that argument. But pretty much it comes down to the coin selection in Wasabi when you queue UTXOs to go into coin joins. This algorithm is deterministic. If you feed the same inputs, it's going to order them as far as which ones to put into the mix first in the same way. And Samurai's entire argument about this being a critical vulnerability boils down to the fact that if you somehow magically knew all of the UTXOs in somebody's wallet already, and more importantly, exactly which ones of those that they had currently queued to go into future coin joins, you could track those outputs to the future remixes that they were doing. So you would be able to isolate those remixed UTXOs to a single future mix round and reduce the anonymity set to just that round. Now, the problem here is you have to first magically know all of the UTXOs in somebody's wallet. And again, I like to stress this, exactly which ones they currently have queued to go into a coin join mix. And then, yes, you can do that. The issue is that is only ever really going to happen if you are taking a big UTXO and pushing it into a Wasabi mix to break it up and then immediately re-queue all of those new broken up UTXOs and only those UTXOs for remixing. So don't do that. Solved. And the second issue relates to unmixed change. In terms of the way Wasabi works with their fee schedule is they kind of tick down the value of the mix UTXO to let users shave fees off and then reset that periodically. So Samurai's argument is that if you just, break something up and add all of it, including the unmixed change, to go into a remix, then after a point, in order to keep remixing the mixed UTXOs, you need to make up the fee difference when that amount resets. And so, yeah, just don't do that. You shouldn't be doing that anyway. But yeah, this issue pretty much requires magical psychic knowledge of an individual wallet's UTXO composition and then exactly which UTXOs they have queued for a mix currently to be able to do any of this. And the one situation that I can practically think that occurs is, you break in a big UTXO into a mix and then immediately remix all of the child UTXOs. So just don't do that. And now, the part that's really greasy here is their recommendation to Wasabi users was just don't use the coin join feature of the wallet at all, which is obviously going to hit ZK Snacks revenue if a lot of users were to do that, rather than just explain to users, don't do that thing in this one situation. Which tells me, in my mind, Samurai doesn't give a fuck about Wasabi users. They don't give a fuck about, people being able to use the tool they want to stay private as safely as possible. They're just trying to fearmonger people into not using it at all and therefore hit a competitor's income stream. So like that's just incredibly deceptive and greasy. And I mean, really, you know, what this comes down to is in this fringe case of somebody dumping a UTXO in that gets broken up and immediately remixing all of these, this could potentially be a viable attack. So just don't do that. Like, this is not a critical vulnerability. This is being so absurdly blown out of proportion. It's ridiculous. Like, and like, frankly, they're released today from the Samurai team going into the details. It's the most ridiculous, over-the-top thing ever. Just pretty much trying to make itself look like a white paper to create an air of authority when all of this boils down to you magically have to already know all the UTXOs in a wallet and which ones are queued in a mix for this to mean anything.
Well, so my only question is, because obviously they tried this out themselves to see if they could do this in the wallet. And my only question is how, like, if you had a couple of parties who are using Wasabi Wallet and doing this deliberately where they didn't care about the privacy or anonymity of their own coins, they were just doing it to mess up the anonymity set for others. What is the potential impact of that?
Your anonymity set would be slightly degraded by the proportion of people doing that, and they all have to pay fees to do that, so it incurs a cost. And I mean, that just kind of boils down to anonymity sets degrade. You can't stop that. When you engage in protocols like this, if other people in that protocol do dumb things, your privacy will degrade accordingly. That's just how this works. So, like, ultimately, you know, it would be a nice step for Wasabi to introduce more randomness in the selection, maybe even more time delays or time randomizations, so that users wouldn't have to consciously, you know, account for this or introduce this. But it's really just this simple. If you dump a big UTXO into Wasabi, do not immediately requeue every child UTXO of that for remixing, and you're fine. Just do one or two at a time. Introduce a little bit of a delay, turn the wallet off periodically, and issue solved.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I have to say, not even specifically about this situation, but just the general climate, is that it continues to annoy me, especially given, you know, the fact that over the last couple of weeks, I have seen some snide comments being like, I know that, you know, Samurai Wallet and Wasabi have not gotten along for quite a long time. Still don't really know what really started all that and why it had to go this far. So know that they clearly do not like Shinobi very much anymore, even before he made the disclosure last month. But also, I've just seen general comments about the podcast and the fact that probably don't like it anymore. And I honestly don't give a shit because I see those comments and I'm just thinking, You're not winning any favor. You're not convincing me that you're someone worth defending. I'm going to continue to highlight actual development that is going on, development that will help people get better privacy in Bitcoin. I'm going to keep doing that, whether that involves people that they don't like, people that they don't agree with. If they have a disagreement, they should handle that like mature people and not go into mumble chat rooms and talk about how they have absolutely no respect for other people working on privacy tech with like, you have to get to that point. That's very extreme. And I'm just increasingly frustrated with all of this. And I don't know what to say anymore, because this all bothers me, and now the fact that they're making attempts to malign both of us when I have tried to do my best to, at the very least, just stay out of the shit, and on the other hand, just, you know, share interesting stuff that is happening in that space, and you know, whatever. I'm going to keep doing that. I'm not going to pay attention to the snitch fit on Twitter anymore, because it drains time that could be used better by me and a bunch of other people more wisely. Probably that's the last time I'm going to comment on this, because I'm getting tired of talking about it. I'm getting tired of reading about it. I'm getting tired of wasting other people's time who has to listen to me saying this. So I'm done. Like, you don't like the podcast? Don't listen. You know, don't read my stuff. I'm going to highlight the good work that people are doing anyway. And I don't care if I don't care what you have to say, if all you're going to do is waste people's time.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's just really, I don't give a shit. You want to be butthurt? Go be butthurt. But my issue is the lying, the deception, the constant false framing, the manipulative bullshit. Like, here's one thing. And I'm probably, after this episode, going to tag them on Twitter at this point. Fuck it. A lot of the samurai people, T-Dev, Keon, love to go around and scream about how Wasabi gets people arrested and point at BitClub. Well, I'd like to see them, you know, show me the lines in the indictment, in the affidavits, in the evidence, in the court proceedings where Chain Analytics had anything whatsoever to do with BitClub getting busted. Not the fact that they were openly engaging in securities fraud, running a Ponzi scheme out in the open, well known for years, on the SEC's radar, and were dumb enough to conspire criminally in unencrypted Facebook chats and emails that the Department of Justice was able to subpoena. So I'd really like to be shown in all of those court documents and evidence where Wasabi and Chain Analytics came into that. Because they really love to go run around pointing at that, screaming how Wasabi got people arrested. That's called lying.
I mean, I don't think we should tag anyone. Like, all we're going to get is more snide little comments on Twitter that come up in my feed. And yeah, but it's like, I'm just going through my day. I'm literally trying to get people's attention on cool stuff that people are doing around this technology. And I'm just looking through Twitter and I see shit talking about something that I'm doing, not mentioning me directly, but shit talking something I'm doing, interviews that we're doing with people. And it's like, go away. Like, like, get to work, get your own work done. But if you're, you know, it's just so confusing, because I don't think that I've done anything wrong necessarily to deserve that. What, like, is that how you make friends? Is that how you want to attract people to this stuff? Do you want your users to go on social media and see that that's how you spend your time? Like, okay, I'm going to divert people away from that, because what's going to happen, the number of people that I've heard say, I'm not going to use either of these clients, I'm not going to engage with these privacy techniques, because I literally don't know which side is, because like, I think to some degree they understand, like, the fact that they published a, like, non-technical explanation of this disclosure, or attempted to, like, they know that most people don't have any clue what they're talking about. They have no idea how to distinguish who's telling the truth. So they're going to look at all of this and be like, well, this side is accusing the other side of being whatever, NSA agents or something. This other side is saying that they're getting people arrested. And it's like, okay, well, yeah, I don't know what to do about that. So I'm just going to use neither, you know? Not gonna use either, because like that's too complicated for me. Like that's the situation you're creating. There will be a few people who may just be smart enough to be like, fuck both of you. The stuff that you've built is fine. I'm just gonna use both. I don't care about your shit talking. Let's go. But a lot of the people who don't know how the hell to distill what you're talking about are just not going to engage. That's the effect that this is all having. And that's not the effect that I want to see. I want more people to be using this technology because guess what? If more people don't use it, it doesn't work. If you're using strategies that don't get more people to engage, you're literally handicapping your product. So, yeah, I am trying to stop you from doing that. You don't have to thank me or anything. You don't have to thank all of the other people who are trying to tell you to stop doing that. I mean, literally, I will quote what Jamis Lop said, because someone asked, why is there so much drama here? And he said, well, joining coins is an intimate activity. And that perfectly reflects the fact that a lot of this debate almost just feels like two, what's the word? Two former lovers who get into a spat and just hate each other for really silly reasons that they haven't gotten over with, but they're going to get back together eventually, or just eventually stop talking about each other behind each other's back all the time. That would be great. But yeah, that is what's happening, people. And I don't want to talk about this anymore, so let's move along.
Alrighty. So, in other news, CoinMarket, a CoinJoin client maintained without stupid, petty bullshit and drama, just dropped a new version 0.7. And this is pretty nice. So, first up, there's a one-click executable for Windows clients now, which, for reasons beyond my understanding, is still a very popular operating system. They have a new refactoring in the back end to have PSBT support. So that's going to be a really nice debt load remove going forward. And also, they have implemented sending support for BIP78 pay joins. So the new BIP spec that was worked out for the BTC Pay integration. And also Wasabi supports. So from this point on, all CoinMarket clients will be able to actually negotiate pay joins with both of those clients and accept the URI and the BIP, but they can't receive them yet. And so until the next major version, CoinMarket's still supporting their old CoinMarket spec pay join implementation. But when they get around to implementing the receive functionality for the new BIP78 version, they're going to deprecate their old spec and just shift completely to that. And also, just a few simple back-end tweaks most of you guys really won't care about. But yeah, get out there, get mixing. I don't hear you mixing.
Yeah, I'm just counting down the days to when join market joins the love triangle. This whole love triangle going on with the privacy wallet fighting.
We shall see. Probably never.
But so you said, because I didn't, I looked at the release, but I didn't notice that you said they were gonna deprecate the other implementation of PayJoin?
Yeah, but they're waiting until they get the receive side functionality for the new spec first, because this is only supporting sending with it.
Do they give like a particular reason for why they're doing that? Because the way I understand is that this PayJoin implementation is like it's more like merchant oriented. It's like if you're going to use it to pay for things, whereas the other implementations, or the previous one that they, or the existing one that they had, and also the one that Samurai has, is more oriented towards peer-to-peer stuff. So is there like a reason why they're deprecating it?
There's no real reason why you need like a merchant setup to implement 78. Like you could use this with peer-to-peer wallets. But it's probably just they got the send functionality and it worked, and the old just ship it and we'll get to it later. I mean, like all you really need is the Tor endpoint, and as long as the wallet supports setting that up when you're on to receive, you know what I mean? Alrighty though. Next up in privacy land.
Sorry, everybody, the Tor project is blockchaining itself.
Ah!
Gotcha.
Stop lying to everybody.
Nope. So on August 18th, they did not do that, but the Tor project published a blog post titled How to Stop the Onion Denial of Service, in which they discuss the difficulties they've had dealing with denial of service attacks. So it starts off, as you may have heard, some onion services have been seeing issues with denial of service attacks over the past few years. The attacks exploit the inherent asymmetric nature of the onion service rendezvous protocol, and that makes it a hard problem to defend against. During the rendezvous protocol, an evil client can send a small message to the service while the service has to do lots of expensive work to react to it. This asymmetry opens the protocol to DOS attacks, and the anonymous nature of our network makes it extremely challenging to filter the good clients from the bad. But then their proposed solution to this right now is an anonymous token system. They say you can think of anonymous tokens as tickets or passes that are rewarded to good clients. In this particular context, we could use anonymous tokens as a way to prioritize good clients over malicious clients when a denial of service attack is happening. An additional benefit of a token-based approach is that it opens up a great variety of use cases for Tor in the future. For example, in the future, tokens could be used to restrict malicious usage of Tor exit nodes by spam and automated tools, hence reducing exit node censorship by centralized services. Tokens can also be used to register human memorable names for onion services, which would be a really great thing, because if you've ever seen the onion addresses, dot onion addresses, they are not human memorable. And they can also be used to acquire private bridges and exit nodes for additional security. Now, before you all start hyperventilating that Tor is blockchaining itself, they say, of course, when most tech people hear the word token 2020, their mind directly skips to blockchains. While we are deferring the blockchain space with great interest, we are also cautious about picking a blockchain solution. In particular, given the private nature of Tor, it's hard finding a blockchain that satisfies our privacy requirements and still provides us with the flexibility required to achieve all our future goals. And of course, they realize that you can do tokens without using a blockchain, which many people have unfortunately not, they have not realized that yet, unfortunately, despite many failing and failed projects to do so. But they do want to use a proof of work system. So they say, in particular, onion services can ask the client to solve a proof of work puzzle, therefore allowing entry. With the right proof of work algorithm and puzzle difficulty, this can make it possible for an attacker to overwhelm the service, impossible for an attacker to overwhelm the service, while still making it reachable by normal clients with only a small delay. Similar designs have also been proposed for TLS. And then they say, we've already started writing a proposal for this system with the great help of friends and volunteers, and we are reasonably confident that existing proof of work algorithms can fit our use case while providing the right level of protection. And then the proposal that they link to in this paragraph is a post by George Kadianakis on June 22nd to the Tor dev mailing list, kind of giving a write-up of what that system would look like using proof of work tokens, which, by the way, people, as you may have seen in a very hot take thread a few weeks ago, yes, proof of work has been around for a long time. There was a well, as a word, proof of work, I can't remember the year the paper was. I think it was 1997 or 92, I can't remember. Adam Back did not invent proof of work, as someone we should remind people, but he did invent a thing called Hashcash, which ended up being a very important project for highlighting the use of proof of work, which was in email clients to prevent spam. So this is not a new thing. The fact that they're doing this doesn't surprise me. And yes, you do not need a blockchain. Proof of work does not have to have a blockchain. Tokens do not need to have a blockchain, but they are still useful for things like this.
Yes. This, yes, not just beyond the excitement I am feeling seeing a project like this realize that you can do just tokens. It's amazing. But like, this would be a perfect, like both of these would be solution for these types of scaling issues with Tor. And until something better comes along, you know, at least to really use it privately, Tor itself is kind of a scaling bottleneck indirectly for Bitcoin. So this would be awesome. And it's like you can compose all of these things like so ridiculously. Like you could just have something tied to the directory authority centrally issuing tokens or handling that. You know, you have the dynamic proof of work for actually connecting to a service. You could have proof of work itself used to generate tokens to some degree. And all of those are just dynamic knobs that can be turned on the service side and the user side. Like a service starts getting spammed, crank up the token price or crank up the proof of work difficulty. Like I, as a user, can overbid that if I want to get through an attack going on right now in terms of doing more proof of work or paying more tokens. And it's just like, this is the exact kind of like throttling valve for this type of shit that Tor is needed, because it's like you can't just blacklist IP addresses on Tor. Everything's anonymous and onion routed. So like this, I would really like to see this, you know, become a priority and start moving forward in terms of what the devs are actually working on. So exciting. All right. So you ready for this weird one, Janine?
Yes. What is it?
So this actually happened back in June. And I'm not sure whether this is an article typo or there were second arrests made on the 18th of this month or just more information released. But Ukraine busted three men who laundered $42 million in ransomware and other proceeds through 20 bucket shop exchanges. So yeah, there were three guys literally operating 20 bucket shops, that were used to funnel ransomware, gains into fiat. And apparently they even distributed some ransomware themselves. But really the interesting thing here is, this was all kicked off by this project, the Bulletproof Exchanger project, from Binance, which is just an internal company operation. And pretty much the whole point of the project is to identify these high-risk exchange services where stuff like this is going on, and not just, you know, incorporate internally for their own risk management, but Binance's team for this actually proactively reached out to Ukraine and Ukrainian law enforcement and passed an entire profile of data on this network of bucket shop exchanges that led to an arrest and a roll up of everything in 3 months. And so, like, this is not just an exchange complying with subpoenas or, you know, dealing with requests. This is, they effectively took their risk management in-house and turned that into doing police work, which they then proactively turned over to law enforcement and led to this network being busted. So, yeah, that's a thing that Binance is doing. You know, like, when does that creep into like individuals just loosely associated with transaction graphs, having proactive reports to the police made about them? So, yeah. So what's up with this corporate migration to the mountains?
Well, I just find it interesting given the kinds of companies that as is also mentioned in this article, have filed for public stock offering in the last month or two. It's been quite interesting seeing the kinds of companies that have been doing that. And one of them, which I try to keep tabs on, and apparently some people at Palantir like to keep tabs on me because they follow me on Twitter, is going to be relocating, or they have already relocated to Colorado instead of Palo Alto, which is where all of them seem to base out of. And so NBC reports that the well, they describe them as a data analytics software company, which is putting it mildly, because if you look at everything that they've done, like predictive policing stuff, working with ICE and everything, let's just say that they are more like a private version of the NSA. Let's put it that way. So they have over 2,500 employees globally, and NBC reports that they are relocating their headquarters to Denver, Colorado, from Palo Alto, California, which apparently they confirmed on Wednesday. The company has updated its website, where it now lists Denver as the site of its headquarters. It also updated its social media pages to reflect the change. Palantir had also announced early July that it filed confidentially for a public stock offering. And oh, some people are asking, well, why have they decided to move? And Chief Executive Officer Alex Karp, they quote, has been open in the past about a potential move. In an interview with Axios, which is basically a PR, not really sure. They basically just push out PR pieces. On HBO in May, said he was against the increasing intolerance and monoculture of Silicon Valley and was nearing a decision on whether or not to move. Karp said at the time Colorado was under consideration. And before I get into why that comment is interesting, I'm going to also quote Peter Thiel, who obviously founded this whole thing. In fact, Palantir, for anyone who doesn't know, was an offshoot of PayPal because he basically took some of the fraud detection software or other that PayPal was using in the early days, and he decided to make Palantir. And then he sought, investment money from the CIA's venture fund, as one does, and then proceeded to be basically have the CIA as their client for a number of years, as one does, things like that. And so Peter Thiel says, we have to figure out ways to make housing more affordable in these places. When people start companies, they're typically getting paid in equity and not a large salary. The way rent and housing costs have gone through the roof in a number of cities where people go to start companies is a tremendous problem. Zoning rules, while well-intentioned, have had the effect of making it almost impossible to take a pay cut and make a leap. Now, while that comment is entirely true, I just find it interesting that he cares about something like that being who he is and the kind of stuff he works on. Yeah. So what do you think may be the real reason that he wants to get out of Silicon Valley? Because my impression is I don't feel like Palantir is exactly the kind of company who would not fit into the monoculture of Silicon Valley, because the monoculture of Silicon Valley is surveillance capitalism, or more accurately, surveillance, how do you pronounce it? Cantillonism? That
Cantillonism.
word. Yeah, that, well, there's like an extra I in there that I think is not supposed to be there, but whatever. I think that's more accurate. Kind of people have been applying that also to the monetary system. But yeah, anyway, you get the point. Yeah, I don't see how exactly Palantir would not fit into that space because they're very successful at doing exactly what Silicon Valley companies do, which is turn people's private information into commodities and make tons of money off of that and basically become private forms of the surveillance state. So, what exactly is he talking about here?
I mean, my read on this is it's just the bottom line dollar. Like, if he makes this move, can bring cost of living down, it's easier to hire people, to retain more people, to grow a workforce. Like, those kinds of costs would probably really compound in a place like San Francisco really quickly. And isn't like Palantir pretty much going public right now? So I'd imagine that like growth is definitely on the short-term horizon in terms of business plans. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it would also not surprise me if part of the decision was the fact that a number of people who work at Palantir may not want to live in California for much longer, given all the stuff that is happening, because they would like to maintain their lifestyle and they may not be able to do that with as much ease with what is going on in California. So, yeah. And also, regular reminder, just to make this a Bitcoin story, there is a former Palantir person working as the chief security officer at BlockFi. So, those, interest payments that some of you may be getting, I hope not, but for anyone who might be listening to this, those interest payments that you're getting, the money that you have given to BlockFi is being carefully managed by someone who has not only worked at Palantir, has also worked at, what was it, the FBI, the, what's the DIA? The Defense Intelligence Agency. What else? Department of Defense. Yeah, very, very safe hands. So I hope you are enjoying those interest payments because apparently they got millions of dollars in investment in the last couple of weeks from some major crypto influencers on Twitter.
We, I mean, fuck it. If there's gonna be an NSA, privatize it. Free market, man. Alrighty, are we ready for Shinobi to nerd out?
I don't know. I don't know if people can handle that much longer.
Nerd! So, Richard Myers, from Gotenna and some others have created a proxy app called FL DigiProxy that hooks up to FL Digi, a program to control radios through software, and hooks up to C-Lightning so that you can have Lightning Channel communications over ham fucking radio. Remember how Rodolfo made that payment to Elaine, like I think a year or two ago. Oh yeah, there is now a software stack to just fucking hook shit up like that. And yeah, this is fucking dope as shit. So obviously very variable in terms of power and the frequencies you use, but the default settings for the proxy pretty much set up a really low bandwidth long distance comm link. And they ran a test between San Francisco, or no, San Jose and Michigan. So 2,000 miles. And yeah, it took about 15 seconds to decode a message somewhere along the length of a very short invoice. And yeah, like ultimately it's kind of bottlenecked here in the sense that like actually setting up a channel and processing a payment over really long distances could take about 5 minutes for like a payment process. It's about, I think, like 1,000 bytes to actually negotiate that back and forth. But You can bridge that gap with a lot denser nodes. And ultimately, hey, if you are in a situation where you don't have any other options, 5 minutes to cheaply move a Lightning payment off chain, doesn't really seem like that bad of a trade-off to me. And I mean, like, honestly, this could really start just making the abstraction layers of Bitcoin's network topology really fucking wonky. Like, let's say you have two regions where radio is the only way to communicate. There's no reason you couldn't set up some bridge channels over ham radio like this, and just somebody can make money bridging those two isolated networks over ham. And just kind of settling those things out over the course of a couple minutes. And you could even go so far as to distribute like block headers or Merkle proofs for things and pay for that over Lightning through this. Because I'm not a big fan of all the messaging apps using it, but you can just pass general messages through Lightning channels. It's pretty much just an onion layer, or an onion routed network. So yeah, like this is really fucking cool in the sense of you can bridge connectivity over the Lightning network. You can derive another source of block headers to check against if you were using, something like the Blockstream satellite feed as a source for that. And yeah, we need much more things like this that allow Bitcoin to be used when things like the assumption of internet access start getting a little sketchy. 'Cause yeah. Censorship resistance. Alrighty though. Shinobi Radio Rant done. Next up, LND has just dropped the 0.11 beta, which is bringing Wumbo support. So LND has finally caught up with C-Lightning and Eclair in removing the 0.16 channel limit that was still being enforced. So yeah, I am really kind of interested to see because LND is one of the most widely used clients on the Lightning Network, how this really starts affecting channel topology and just the overall network graph. Because, unless you were competent enough to kind of hack this into LND yourself, you've been just kind of sitting there with your thumb up your butt waiting or having to move to a different client. So going to be kind of interesting how that plays out. They've also updated the autopilot heuristic to kind of look more, I don't know how to put this simply, look more at the paths and their intersections that you could route payments through with different nodes rather than directly at how connected individual nodes are, to try to have a less gameable autopilot heuristic. Also set up a new backend etcd for the database storage. And the neat thing here is this allows you to kind of have replicated databases in different places so that you don't wind up having to use static channel backups and be forced to close channels out on chain if you were to suffer a database loss. So that is a really nice thing for anybody running core nodes or routing nodes trying to make money or services. That could wind up getting really expensive if your database got corrupted and you had to close everything out on chain. And then also, they have a new API function to intercept HTLCs so that you can kind of have some other process or application check some condition before actually forwarding or do neat things like open a channel on the fly to finish routing a payment. And then they have a similar hold function for the key send payments, which is you just sending without an invoice to a node. So let's say if you just sent me a key send and I'm operating some service, I could kind of grab that before my node settles it and then make sure that I'm actually able to provide that service before I settle that payment. So that way, I wouldn't have to issue a refund or anything if I couldn't, or if some item was out of stock. But mostly just a lot of improvements for people actually running infrastructure on top of stuff, and more moving more in that direction of like modular access and hackability to things, which I've kind of harped on for a while is like their biggest weak point. But yeah. If you feel like taking risks with beta software, no Wumbo cheer from you, Janine? Really?
What, how do you do the cheer?
Wumbo! I don't know. I just made that up.
Mumbo wumbo jumbo.
Mumbo, wumbo, jumbo. Alrighty. And then this we touched on last week, but Strike has launched their Strike Rewards program for cash back. And pretty much the whole gist of how this came to be is in the process of Bitcoin Moms and Bill's shop using Strike to accept money as a cannabis dispensary with all those banking problems. They still kind of had friction in terms of encouraging people to use Strike. And so their processing fees could be anywhere from 5 to 15% because cannabis businesses just get screwed like that. And so they started offering 5 to 10% discounts in prices if you paid with Strike. And they saw a massive uptick in terms of customers, willing to download Strike and use this. And so they're rolling it out as the an overall thing with a few businesses. And man. See, so me and Mr. Hoddle's shirt store, Bit Refill and Crypto Cloaks, anybody using Strike to pay there will get 5% cash back. And the Lightning Network based Fortnite clone Light Knight, anybody using Strike will get 15% cash back. And they're going to work on pretty much trying to expand to other businesses. I'm assuming crypto specific businesses as well in the coming weeks. But I am not going to lie. I literally, me and Mr. Hoddle had no idea that he was going to do this. And Jack is just doing this. Like, this is not coming out of any kind of cash back from us as a business. And so I really don't know what to say other than, like, fucking thanks, man. Because, I just got a ping that this was a thing now, right before he pushed this publicly. So, yeah, Jack is a real fucking stand-up guy.
So, do you have to be a Strike user to get cash back, or is it just anyone who pays to a store using Strike?
Yeah, you have to be a Strike user with the app, and anytime you go to these stores and pay with Strike, you'll get whatever percentage cash back in USD and Strike.
Well, let's just say that 5% is the cost of doxing yourself to Strike.
Well,
Or it's the incentive to.
I mean, that is what it is, but I just gotta say on a personal level, like, I appreciate that because he just did that, and that could potentially drive business our way. And, I really appreciate it.
Well, all I can say is that I've never encountered a privacy-preserving cashback program, so, you know.
Well, I mean, it is what it is. Like, Strike is a little lightning bank, it's that really you have to change the laws or find little thresholds and ways that you can indirectly get out of things. But think I don't know.
Or just keep your privacy.
I'm even wrestling with this myself, but I think a lot of people in this space are going to get very disappointed at how many people are willing and comfortable with using things like that in the coming years.
Oh, I've already been disappointed for a number of years, and that's not going to change my strategy to not that.
Well, I'm just willing to put out there, if you are comfortable with that, I am totally comfortable with accepting your Bitcoin for silly swag.
This is true.
Alrighty though. What is up next with something finally moving into a proper release soon?
Yeah, so I can't remember, or God, I should have checked, but I can't remember which episode up on sometime in June, but Luke Childs has been working on a automated BIP39 recovery tool for Electrum since June. And you can see if you go to the pull request that I tweeted out and will be included in the show notes, you can see like a little demo video of how it would work. But basically, if you have a BIP39 seed and you're not quite sure which wallet you generated on, you're not quite sure if there's any Bitcoin there, or maybe you imported it into a different wallet, that wallet was, showing it as having no funds, and you got really confused, and you're like, what the hell? Why? I know I have Bitcoin here and it's not showing up. So maybe you just, you're not able to recover it. And so this tool is meant for people like that, that you get confused about, which derivation pass you might have coins on, you're not sure where your coins are, if they're still there, and how to get them. And so he built a recovery tool that basically allows you to input seed words, and it will tell you where your coins are and what kind of scripts they're using, and then allow you to recover it. And at the moment, I think he clarified it doesn't work for multi-sig. It's only single sig, but that's still really useful. I can't remember. I don't think it tells you which wallet you were using, but he did, in building this tool, he did rely on the wallets recovery thing that Rodolfo and I have been working on, basically figuring out what derivations different wallets use for different things, and it's a complete mess. It still is a complete mess. So it won't tell you what wallet necessarily was used to generate it, but it will tell you the type of script that the coins are stored at, and also the derivation path of where they are. And it will help you to recover those coins if you're not sure of how to do so. So that thing has been merged as of 2 days ago. There was a bit of a long waiting period while it was the final reviews, but it has been merged.
Woo! That should just straight up be a standard function in all wallets. Next up, let's get those derivation path descriptors. Chop chop.
Yeah, no, a kind of related thing. I think it was Andrew Chow. He was asking, who was it? I think he was asking, I can't remember. He was trying to figure out why it might have even been, I think it was actually Trezor. He was asking Trezor why they were referencing BIP38 in their documentation when there actually is no BIP38, and it turns out that BIP38 is just kind of it's the derivation. I think it's BIP38. But basically that's what the hardware multi-signature schemes use. They kind of just laid claim to BIP38 even though there is no BIP38. So that was interesting, and also once again confirms why we should have built that guide, because even people who develop interfaces for hardware wallets and stuff. They're like, what? Or why are you referencing a BIP that doesn't exist?
Standards. They're a thing for a reason. But
I'm
yeah, that
sure
would.
there's a great FECD comic about standards. We should have a standard for these standards. Oh no.
Another
Standards all the way
standard.
down.
Yeah, it's just there's a lot of silly shit like that really does need to get cleaned up and standardized and references made in the appropriate places, 'cause that's just kind of fucking silly at this point that all the hardware devices in the space, like a few of the early multi-sig wallets, like did this, and it's not even documented in a BIP. Like, come on. Alrighty though. I think that puts us at final thoughts time.
Well, my final thought is a congratulations to BISC. They tweeted, I think it was August 19th, that they hit 70,000 trades all time as of the day before that, so August 18th. And that was 6 months after hitting 50,000. So they literally made 20,000 trades in a 6 month period compared to 50,000 in their entire existence. So that is a big deal. And I think they highlighted that they said, question, why do you Yanks charge so much of a premium on your Bitcoin? Euro is much more friendly. Yes, there is a massive premium on the USD Bitcoin trades.
Make that money. I mean, I don't know. We appreciate our freedom and independence here in this country much more than Europe, apparently. I mean, it is, after all, America.
Yes, the freedom and independence to have ATMs that KYC you up the ass, and the freedom and independence to charge each other exorbitant premiums in your peer-to-peer trades.
Well, you, sir, want your private Bitcoin, and I want my fee for providing it.
Well, it's kind of funny how if you want to get KYC free Bitcoin from a Bitcoin ATM, you probably have to go to Europe to get that.
Yep. Find some shady ATM in a back alley somewhere that isn't legally supposed to be there.
My friend, I can surprise you. There are KYC free ATMs literally in internationally well-known accounting company buildings in their lobby.
That's not as cool as some grungy back alley somewhere. That's not Bitcoin.
No, it's
That's
definitely
not on the
not as
streets.
punk. That is true. It is not on the streets, but occasionally you can find a lot of street lurking its way into an office very unassumingly.
Whoop.
And it's far less noisy.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm really struggling for a final thought here, so I'm just gonna go derp.
Well, I have another one. It was BTC Pay Server's third birthday on August 18th. Because August 18th, 2017 was the day that Nicolas Dorier said, "This is lies. My trust in you is broken. I will make you obsolete," to BitPay. And oh boy, that has absolutely come true.
You know what? I want to gripe about turning everything in this space into a holiday, but not about this. Damn it.
And my final thought is I have found the perfect music video for Money Printer Go Brr, which is HardFi's Cash Machine music video.
Alrighty. Well, here's my final thought. I don't know. There were a few things, didn't make it onto the news desk this week, because Shinobi got lazy and was bad at time management. But I might do an orphan block to get in those or into those in the next day or two. I just need to let my brain reset. But yeah.
Is it really an orph? Is it really an orphan block, or is it more like an uncle?
How dare you? You're kicked off the show. Later, punks. I need to go through the firing process with Janine.
Bye. Yeah, I'm not sure.